The death of Trayvon Martin by a Neighborhood Watch volunteer, legally carrying a concealed handgun, has stirred clashes between impassioned opponents of such types of permits and staunch supporters of gun rights. Intertwined in these debates are accusations of racism and stereotyping. At the forefront of this controversy, however, is the long-standing legal doctrine of self-defense and recent legislative efforts to codify that right in stand-your-ground laws and CASA laws. At common law, a person had the right to be free from unwanted physical harms and also the threat of such harms. In addition, a person had the right to use force against a person who threatened such harm to the person or another. And a person even had the right to use deadly force if imminent serious or lethal harm was threatened to ward off the attack. However, the person claiming self-defense had to have a reasonable perception of that threat, but he could be mistaken. So, if a jokester dressed as a robber pointed a realistic but fake gun at you, and you responded with real, deadly force, then you would not be criminally or civilly at fault for the unfortunate death. Over time, the common law developed to encompass situations in which would-be victims confronted with threats of bodily harm had a clear avenue of retreat or escape. Perhaps I can jump in my car or run into a building to escape your threat of imminent harm, but I choose to use force against you instead. Some legal scholars argue that a duty to retreat before using deadly force is the optimal rule here, as it results in zero harms versus one or even two harms. However, many states don't agree and allow the would-be victim the privilege of self-defense, even if there is a riskless avenue of retreat. Most of the time, both rules have the same end result, because we can never require that a potential victim be able to assess in a split second that she could both clearly escape and clearly ward off an attacker. Moreover, the common law has always supported the right of a would-be victim to use deadly force instead of abandoning his home, allowing an attacker to lay siege to his residence. So, if you are in one part of your house and hear an intruder yell a murderous threat, you don't have to run out the back door to the neighbors or your car, even if you clearly can. Though you never have the right to use deadly force to protect your property, even your house, you do have the right to use deadly force to protect yourself in your house, rather than retreat. Phew! Well, if the law is so clear, why do states pass statutes giving constituents rights they already had? First, many constituents may not know what existing rights they have and may applaud the legislator who votes to champion their rights to defend themselves. In addition, legislators may want to be sure that the common law is never rolled back by judges who may think that modern times call for different rules. So, CASA laws guarantee that residents never have to retreat from their homes before using deadly force, and stand-your-ground laws guarantee that would-be victims never have to retreat from public places or other property. So, will the Florida stand-your-ground law protect George Zimmerman from criminal or civil liability for the death of Trayvon Martin? Unfortunately, the existence of the statute doesn't make the fundamental inquiry any easier. To be afforded the privilege to stand one's ground, Zimmerman must have had a reasonable belief that deadly force was necessary to prevent imminent serious harm. This will turn on what we think Zimmerman should have sensed from Martin's actions that night. And that inquiry gets us back to the shouting over race, class, and stereotyping. This is Christine Hurt.